Why did Timothy McVeigh carry out the Oklahoma City bombing? You may think you know the story of the 1995 attack that killed 168 people, but newly published documents and interviews have brought new insights into the act. Best-selling author, lawyer, and legal commentator Jeffrey Toobin has dug deep into McVeigh's story and joins us now to share what he's learned about the past, present, and future of right-wing terrorism in America.
Hi, this is Jeffrey Toobin. I'm the author of Homegrown, Timothy McVeigh and the Rise of Right-Wing Extremism. Here are five key insights from the book. Point one, this is why you should care about the Oklahoma City bombing. Most people know something about the Oklahoma City bombing. They know that it was April 19th, 1995. They know that 168 people died, including 19 children. And they probably know that Timothy McVeigh set off the bomb. But what makes this story so important today, 28 years later, is that Tim McVeigh was not, as he is often described, as anti-government, as if he were some sort of lone wolf eccentric. Timothy McVeigh was a right-wing extremist. He was part of a political movement in the 1990s. He was a dedicated listener to Rush Limbaugh. He believed that Vince Foster, the White House aide who committed suicide, was murdered by the Clintons. When he did target practice in the fields of Kansas, he used a photograph of Hillary Clinton's face on top of the silhouettes he was shooting at. He is part of a right-wing extreme movement that has continued to this day. If you look at the obsessions of the people who attacked the Capitol on January 6, 2021, they are almost identical to McVeigh's views: an obsession with gun rights, a belief in violence, a claimed kinship to the founding fathers. To look at Timothy McVeigh's story today is to see how his views survived and flourished in the age of the internet decades later. Point two, who were McVeigh and Nichols? Well, they were both distinctive individuals, but they both led lives that were representative of larger themes and trends in American life, and especially in the development of the right wing. Timothy McVeigh grew up outside Buffalo. His father worked at a GM plant in a town called Lockport for 30 years. His grandfather worked at the same plant for 30 years. At the time Tim McVeigh was growing up in the 80s, that plant was shrinking, like so much of the Buffalo area and so much of the upper Midwest that Buffalo is basically a part of. Tim McVeigh was living through the decline of industrial America and the shrinking of job opportunities. And the story of his political development is really the story of a search for scapegoats. He was someone who didn't blame the people who ran the companies, but he blamed the government, that the government had turned on him. And he embraced a right-wing philosophy that was centered on the protection of what he believed about the Second Amendment. The guns meant everything to him. Later, when he joined the army, he became much more fixated on race and blaming black people who he thought were jumping the line ahead of him. Women. He was, before this term was used, an incel, an involuntary celibate. Terry Nichols, his friend who he met in the army, grew up outside in the Thumb of Michigan, and his life reflected the decline of agricultural America, just as Tim McVeigh's life reflected the decline of industrial America. And both of them saw opportunities that their parents' generation had disappearing before their eyes. Both of them turned to the military as a way of trying to escape their homes, and for different reasons, that dream did not turn out well for them either. Point three, the difference between 1995 and today is the internet and social media. The haunting thing that Timothy McVeigh said to his lawyers was, there was an army out there, but I never found it. And what he meant by that was, there was an army of people who shared his extremist views, but he could never figure out a way to find them and recruit them to his side. He went to gun shows, he sold the Turner Diaries, the dystopian novel that was such an important inspiration to him. He listened to Rush Limbaugh, but he could never find the real allies and co-conspirators that he wanted. A big inspiration to me in writing Homegrown was learning about the plot to kidnap Governor Whitmer of Michigan in October of 2020. And that plot was made by the Michigan militia, which Terry Nichols, the co-defendant in the bombing case, was affiliated with. But the difference was that in 2020, the co-conspirators in the kidnapping could use the internet. They used Facebook private chats to make their plans. And if you look at all the right-wing extremism of today, the internet is centrally involved. And that's why I think that right-wing extremism and violence is frankly scarier now, because it's easier for the people that McVeigh called the army to find each other and work together. Point four, did McVeigh and Nichols act alone? Was there a broader conspiracy? There have been rumors to that effect for years. People on the left often say that there was really a broader right-wing conspiracy. People on the right have tried to prove that there was foreign involvement, especially Islamic terrorists. Well, I'm here to say, based on my research, that neither of those theories is true, and McVeigh and Nichols did act alone. And the reason is based in the evidence that I've uncovered and that came out during the investigation and trial. And one piece of evidence in particular, McVeigh and Nichols thought they were being very clever in hiding their long-distance phone calls. In those days, there were things called calling cards, and they bought a calling card from a right-wing newspaper called The Spotlight, which they thought would never be uncovered. So what that accomplished was that every time they made a long-distance phone call from the period leading up to about a year and a half before the bombing to the bombing, the FBI could pinpoint every call they made and each time where they were making it from. So we know everyone that McVeigh and Nichols were in communication with, and none of them were co-conspirators. We saw how they tried to find all the ingredients, the fuel, the fertilizer, the infamous Ryder truck. All of that is in the calling card, but no other conspirators are in the calling card, which proves to me that McVeigh and Nichols acted alone. Point five, what was Merrick Garland's role in the Oklahoma City investigation, and what does it tell us about him as Attorney General now and the investigation of Donald Trump? Well, at the time, Merrick Garland's title in the Justice Department was Principal Associate Deputy Attorney General. And what that means in plain English is that he was sent to Oklahoma City a day after the bombing to supervise the investigation. And he was obsessed by something in particular in April of 1995, and it was the O.J. Simpson case. That was going on at precisely the same time, and it was a national obsession and a tremendous example to Garland of what the Justice Department should not do in the Oklahoma City investigation. He had and has a great aversion to public relations, to public's display. He did not want the kind of circus that the OJ case turned into. And every step in the process was one he took with the least amount of public attention he could get. And that lesson is one he has carried forward to the Trump investigation. He has imposed on himself a burden of silence that is greater, frankly, than he needs to. And I think he does not see the role of the Justice Department, the role of the prosecutor, as one of public education, but one only of courtroom prosecution. And I think that's a debatable proposition about whether that's the right role. But it's clearly the role that Garland saw in 1995 for himself and for the Justice Department, and it's the one he is putting forth as Attorney General now in the Trump investigation.
Thank you, Jeffrey. That was Jeffrey Toobin with five big ideas from Homegrown, Timothy McVeigh and the Rise of Right-Wing Extremism. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.